Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that's too tired to get off the roller coaster. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Cheers, Corey.
People in British politics have talked a lot about crunch weeks in Brexit before, but this week has taken the distinctively crunchy, you might say, biscuit. It's so crunchy, in fact, that we are breaking the podcast's no alcohol rule.
Cheers.
Cheers. This week in Brexit, though, has been crunchier than a case in a cream caravan crammed full of crunchy nut clusters. See Jacob Rees-Mogg, us proles can do alliteration too.
And you got it in one take as well.
Start with the important news, listeners. So in the cricket, Australia ended the day two declaring on 497 for 8, and in reply England inevitably lost an opening wicket, 23 for 1 on close of play. Now, this tells you, listeners, that we are recording this on Thursday. This episode will go out on Sunday. In that 3 days, it's quite possible that Boris Johnson won't be Prime Minister. Which would be hilarious.
It is quite possible that anything could happen at the moment.
Shall we start with what's happened this week?
So much. But yes, let's start right there.
Let's try and go day by day. I mean, Monday was very much storm clouds before the big kerfuffle in Parliament, wasn't it?
Definitely.
But because of that kerfuffle, because of what was going to happen later in the week, there were massive briefings from Number 10 that Johnson was going to call a snap election. And then there was the announcement that Boris Johnson was going to make a statement outside Number 10 at 6 o'clock. And he came out and went peak Theresa May, didn't he?
Yeah, he came out. Lecturn was out. We were kind of going, okay, we're going to get an official statement on something. Is he saying he's going to plan to call an election? In reality, we got nothing. There was nothing there at all of any meaningful substance.
No, there was a bad speech, delivered badly. Partly because I think he was a little bit ruffled by the people shouting stop the coup, who obviously didn't listen to our last podcast.
No, they didn't listen to me. Which is fine, I've come to the conclusion on that one. It's no one's listening to me.
What? It was very surreal because at one point, Johnson starts talking about, you know, we need to carry on with this to enact the will of the people. And then there are protesters chanting stop the coup. And you think, this sounds like Egypt or something. Like, this is absolutely surreal. But essentially he said, I don't want an election. No one wants an election.
But we might have to have an election because Parliament might stop Brexit.
It was very May, because May would get out the lectern and then say absolutely nothing. We said on the podcast a few weeks ago that Boris Johnson's administration started like Theresa May's, and it's carried on like that, just without May's steely charisma.
God, that is a damning indictment.
Well, we'll get onto on Wednesday. We'll damn it even more. Tuesday, though. Tuesday is possibly the crunchiest day. It's the day before you put the milk on the crunchy nut clusters, I feel like. After that, everything's been a bit less crunchy.
Yeah, the sogginess has kind of started to set in.
Mm. Next week, obviously, we refill the bowl and crunchy week starts all over again. It's the day that Johnson lost his majority, and lost it in quite badass style. Philip Lee.
Yeah, he literally just walked into the House of Commons and sat down with the Liberal Democrats. Hadn't announced it, hadn't talked to anybody. Like, I saw somebody describe it on Twitter as that it was the if you were going to choreograph a crossing of the floor, this is how the WWE would do it with, like, in professional wrestling.
Well, and Johnson clocked it as well. Johnson was midway through his speech and clocks Lee walking and goes, oh boy. I better not lose any more MPs by the end of the day. Essentially then, Parliament voted, like they did a few months ago, I think with Cooper Letwin bills, essentially to take over the parliamentary timetable to try and pass a bill to delay Britain's exit from the European Union, essentially so we don't crash out with a no deal and have economic Armageddon.
Yeah, a vote which the government had tried to essentially position as a vote of confidence in Boris Johnson's administration, with right down to threatening MPs on the Conservative side of the House that if they voted against said motion, that they would be barred from standing in the next general election as Conservative candidates.
In as much as you can actually have votes of confidence under the fixed term Parliament Act. And what happens is 21 Conservative MPs vote to take over parliamentary control. And despite the threats and despite the bluster, go through with it anyway. And so you have a situation where, to quote Hugh Gaitskell's wife, the wrong people are cheering because somehow this government has ended up with Nadine Dorries and Jacob Rees-Mogg on the front bench and has kicked David Cork and Ken Clark and Nicola Soames out of the Conservative Party.
Yeah, like, it is absolutely bizarre and mad that Nicola Soames, Winston Churchill's grandson, has been thrown out of the Conservative Party.
For defending parliamentary sovereignty.
It's absolutely mad. Like, when you look at the calibre of people that have been thrown out of the Conservative Party. Well,
but the thing, so David Gawk and Alistair Burt, both ministers,
yeah,
that proper loyal ministers, like Uncork the Gawk was generally what they said when they needed someone to go on the Today programme, or George Osborne are massively cocked up,
yeah,
and they needed an affable Treasury minister to be night watchman.
Yeah, yeah. Again, going back to Nicola Soames, somebody who's, I don't think, ever really rebelled against the Conservative whip. So many of the people that have rebelled are kind of the highest calibre of Conservative Party politicians. Not just in the sense of, oh, these are the politicians that we as left-wingers quite like, but just in their intellect, in their skill, in their ability and in their experience.
Ken Clark held most of the great offices of state for the Conservatives.
Yes.
Including under Margaret Thatcher.
It astounds me that he's no longer viewed by the Conservatives to be a Conservative. The man served under Maggie Thatcher.
Can you imagine if Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party expelled 21 MPs, including Harriet Harman? Can you imagine the reaction? So Johnson went in a day from having a majority to losing his first ever vote, which I think is the first time, I think, since Pitt the Younger or something daft.
Yeah.
And went from a majority of plus one to minus 43, which is the wrong direction to go in.
It's an impressive first week. It really is an impressive first week for all the wrong reasons from his perspective.
It would almost be better if those 21 MPs had left of their own volition to form an independent Conservative Party. But they didn't. He just kicked them out. But that was only Tuesday. On Wednesday, we read Hilary Benn's bill, which the aim of which is to extend Britain's membership of the European Union beyond the 31st of October and essentially stop there from being a no-deal Brexit. It's a very, very tightly written bill. The idea essentially is to tie a government's hands. Like, no prime minister is able to crash the UK out without a deal.
Essentially, it passes all control, really, into the hands of Parliament on every single kind of step of the kind of like the process.
And did Boris Johnson's tough tactics on the other rebels from the day before work on Wednesday?
No.
No, it didn't, because Caroline Spelman also rebelled and said she was going to stand down as an MP. Then we had, I think this is, oh, actually before that, we had Boris Johnson's first PMQs. Now, Boris Johnson is worse at PMQs than Theresa May is.
It is absolutely astounding that somebody who has managed to build a reputation for being a charismatic individual because he's appeared on Have I Got News For You, because he's able to give these quite funny speeches and make people laugh, is actually really, really bad at one of the most basic elements of modern politics, which is public speaking. He's just absolutely terrible at it, especially in the context of being held to account. He is somebody who's managed to go his entire life basically with nobody actually criticising him, seemingly, in a way that actually matters and makes him think about what he's done and whether he can improve this or improve that. And as a result, now if somebody comes at him, even with mild criticism, he just goes, oh, well, yes, whiff-waff.
I'm reminded of Mary Beard, who talked about a debate that she did with against Boris Johnson. And Johnson was talking about some sort of legend, Pericles, blah. And Mary Beard said, well, that's not quite true, though, is it, Boris? And Johnson just didn't know what to say, apparently. And you can kind of tell that in the PMQs. Given that, Jeremy Corbyn, bless him.
He's not the best at PMQs.
Even his most ardent supporters, of which you might be surprised to hear, listeners, there are more than a couple. Not even they claim that he is good at PMQs. It's not his thing. Like, Johnson's speech pattern is after-dinner speech at a rugby club.
Yeah.
With people who go, ah, well, Boris Johnson, he's a lad, isn't he? Because he's a character. Not like those other politicians who, you know, achieve things. Whereas Jeremy Corbyn's speech pattern is, I'm at a rally with thousands of people who agree in this cause. I'm going to say some things about that cause, and you're going to applaud after this line. That's Corbyn's speech. It works on the megaphone, doesn't really work in the Commons.
No.
And Corbyn hasn't quite got the...
It's not got the cadence right.
Well, it's more the thinking on your feet style. Like, and it must be bloody tough. And some people have it and some people don't. William Hague had it. Terrible leader of the opposition. Yeah. So, you know, swings and roundabouts. Jeremy Corbyn walked all over Boris Johnson, had him for breakfast. It was quite pitifully astonishing to watch. And then there was a wonderful question from Tanpreet Desi, I believe, who's a Sikh Labour MP, talked to very, very passionately and articulately about, or more articulately than me, because I don't think that's a word, about Boris Johnson's article, which we talked about last year on our Silly Season show, in which he compared women who wear the hijab and the burqa to pillar boxes and bank robbers, and got applause in the chamber. And Johnson's response was, well, if you read the full article, I think you'll find that the article is a defence of the right of women to wear the burqa. It's like, it's not the point, mate. Like, hate crime went up.
Yeah, if your argument, essentially, for something like this is, well, it's out of context, that's not a very good defence, especially when you can point to actual meaningful things, like hate crime increasing as a result, as a result of your bloody ridiculous rhetoric.
So PMQs happened. Then the SAG, or as we should call him, the SAG, came up. I think once again, this is going to be one of those weeks where there's so much stuff that happens in Parliament, the kind of budget goes by and we don't notice.
Yeah.
And then, because the Benn Bill passed, Boris Johnson tried to get a general election through the Fixed Term Parliaments Act. And that was voted down as well, because he didn't get the two-thirds majority, even though the vote in effect was 298-56. You need a two-thirds of all MPs, which he doesn't have. So Boris Johnson lost his first three Commons votes.
Which it's got to be a record at this point.
Surely. That was Wednesday. Today is Thursday. There was worries that the House of Lords would try and talk out the Hillary Benn bill.
They tried to, the Conservative peers tried to amend, I believe, 92 separate amendments to it.
Oh yes, on amendments, we missed out the fact that Stephen Kinnock's amendment passed because the government didn't put up any tellers.
Which I can't work out if that's incompetence on their side or some kind of conspiracy to try and wrangle leaving Brexit through Theresa May's withdrawal agreement.
So yes, that happened. So the House of Lords has said that they're going to probably have passed the Benn Bill by Friday afternoon. So by the time you're listening to this, the Benn Bill will almost certainly have been passed. And also what happened today, Luciana Berger joined the Lib Dems.
Yeah.
So they've now got two more MPs. By this rate, the Lib Dems will have a working majority by about 2150. So if Brexit isn't resolved by then, at least we could just revoke Article 50 and have done with it for another 150 years. But Joe Johnson resigned as a minister and I believe as an MP. Now, there are lots of jokes, or rather, there's one joke floating around, which obviously we're not going to repeat.
No. Corey. Have you heard that Joe Johnson is the first MP to resign from Parliament to spend, and this is the great bit, to spend less time with his family?
I don't get it. So, that's what's happened. That's taken us 20 minutes. The question now is, what on earth is Dominic Cummings playing at? We should get some more wine.
Yes. As I say, I think Dominic Cummings has, over the past 4 days, basically shown that his reputation for being a strategic genius is somewhat overrated. Everything the government has done from the prorogation of Parliament onwards has been a bit of a strategic disaster and a tactical disaster as well. Like, it's not even a case of you can say, okay, this delivers short-term advantage for long-term pain or anything like that. It's just been, I can't use the word I want to use because it's swears. Yeah, it's been a cluster Willis after a cluster Willis after a cluster Willis.
Cluster Willis cubed.
Oh, that's a terrible concept. As a result of all of this, like, there have literally been descriptions of Dominic Cummings wandering around the halls of Parliament, looking quite flustered, not quite sure what to do, and just kind of approaching Labour MPs, trying to dare them, quite literally, into calling an election. It's like, if that's what you're doing, then you're clearly on the back foot. This is not a man whose strategic master plan is actually happening. This is a man who's been caught on the hop and is now not able to think quickly enough to actually respond in a meaningful way.
I suppose let's try to think through what we think the government is doing. So we've said, and it seems borne out, that the Johnson administration was trying to provoke Parliament into doing something that would give them the pretext for calling an election.
Yes.
That happened. What didn't happen, that it seems that everyone assumed would happen, is that Labour did not back an election. Labour's policy on Brexit has been evolving, one could say. Maybe since 1949.
Let's not go that far back.
When the Attlee government didn't join the European Coal and Steel Community. And since then, we've been slightly split on the issue. And there's one thing that Labour said quite repeatedly, or certainly Jeremy Corbyn said repeatedly, which is that we want a general election. And then they say, here is your election, Boris Johnson says, and we say, yeah, but not yet. And I wonder, actually, if as people have started to overestimate Cummings, I think, actually, they've started to underestimate Seamus Milne.
I know. It's terrible for us to say this, but I think you might be right.
But I think the thing is, and we've been guilty of it too, but like Milne's politics are terrible.
Yeah, he's still an awful, awful person.
And in terms of just the day-to-day getting press releases out, all that kind of stuff, doesn't seem great either. On the other hand, in the 2017 election, made some good calls. For instance, the decision to focus on police cuts or talk about how foreign policy leads to more terror attacks, which was seen like very risky but paid off. I remember 2 years ago when we had the 2017 election and I predicted there was no way in merry hell we'd have an election because Labour wouldn't vote for an election. And yet they did, presumably because at some level Corbyn's team thought they had a chance. And they were right. And I think they're right now in that it's not in Labour's interest to have an election now, given Johnson and his honeymoon and his, and given the fact that the longer that Brexit gets delayed, the worse it is for him. And given Corbyn's not great poll ratings as well. I mean, the start of the week saw a poll with him polling behind Joe Swinson, who would make best Prime Minister. There was a Stephen Bush column in the Sunday Times this week saying that, you know, Labour's team are aware of this. So I think that Johnson's team and Cummings in particular just thought, oh, well, Labour would agree to it because how could you not? You'd look cowardly. And that's the line they're going for. There's a literally front pages today of Jeremy Corbyn mocked up as a chicken.
Yeah, it's calling him the most dangerous chicken in Britain, which is just like...
Surely the most dangerous chicken in Britain is chlorinated chicken we get under a deal with America, under a no-deal Brexit, Steve?
Almost certainly. What I do find massively fascinating is the notion of, like, a chicken, be it a literal or metaphorical cowardly chicken, they are not dangerous. No one has ever described a chicken as dangerous.
Depends like, how much you've cooked it for, because it could have salmonella.
Yeah, it could have salmonella, but no. But, so, literally, I think it was the Sun that ran with that. With that particular front page, because of course it was. And it's trying to have its cake and eat it at the same time. It's trying to, Jeremy Corbyn is a dangerous man because of his politics, because of his views, because of this, because of that, but also he's a coward. It's like, that's not, like, either he's a revolutionary who's going to push through all of these things, or he's a coward who's not going to do anything.
A revolutionary chicken, like Colonel Sanders, perhaps. Well, the last chicken in Britain turned out the lights, which is hard because, you know, things.
See, listeners, this is why we don't drink when we do podcasting. The main takeaway that people will be getting from the events of the past few days is that Labour didn't vote for a general election. Labour basically voted to delay Brexit, in effect. That is the main takeaway that people are going to take. The intricacies of what day might Labour actually vote for a general election, when might that general election be, are irrelevant to 99% of the British population. Whilst the actual top-line act of screwing over Boris Johnson and preventing a general election and screwing over and preventing a no-deal Brexit, that is much more likely to cut through, and as a result of that, much more likely to be a positive for Labour's general election chances, whenever that election might be.
And I hope that actually the message of this week is, the longer the election is delayed, if you take it beyond the 31st of October into November, the weaker Boris Johnson is.
Absolutely. Boris Johnson is in a position where effectively he's got two irreconcilable positions if he can't get an election scheduled before the 31st of October. Either he has to act upon the law, which will demand an extension, or he has to, which goes against his statements on what he wants to do on Brexit, thus screwing over the Conservative Party and sending God knows how many votes to the Brexit Party at the next election in all likelihood, or he has to break the law completely and not actually, you know, send things for royal assent or whatever, at which point he ends up in, and I'm not even exaggerating here, potentially into kind of treasonous territory. Like, it is literally potentially that serious for him and the government.
In a week, we've gone from, I think, talk of a coup is overstated to
potentially treason. Yeah, I know. I'm not. The irony is not lost on me. But it actually is that kind of...
I think misconduct in public office is...
It's probably the closest. Yeah, it would be what they go for, but...
I think they've made a fundamental miscalculation, which is, as you said last week, the forces against Boris Johnson might not know what they want particularly, or rather a split on that.
Yes.
But they do know what they don't want, and they don't want a no-deal Brexit. And what's been really interesting is watching, probably for the first time actually, certainly in Birmingham for the first time, trade unionists and Momentum members and pro-EU campaigners campaigning at the same protest at the same time for the same reason. Now, that hasn't happened, I don't think. And that, I think, is a very significant shift. And in terms of the next election, which will be shaped by tactical voting...
Yes, absolutely.
...is very, very significant. And therefore, I think the... I can see what Johnson, I think, is trying to do. I can see that addressing the issues of austerity and increasing spending is the right thing to do. I can see that going for a quick election is the right thing to do. If anything, they haven't had the election quick enough. Because it's only been about 6 weeks and already his government's falling apart. But I think a better way of driving a wedge through the anti-Tory, even anti-Brexit forces, is to put a deal through. All the 21 people that Johnson expelled from the Conservative Party this week, they would have voted for whatever deal he put through.
Yeah, if he had turned around, managed to spin Theresa May's deal as having some slight amendment to it and hailed it as, you know, a massive success, then there is a very real chance, actually, that he might have been able to get that through.
If he'd have gone for a Northern Ireland-only backstop, which was the EU's plan originally, mm-hmm. back in December 2017 before the DUP
ruined
kicked
everything.
Off, it could have been enough of a pretext to get it through. In terms of the Tory party, a lot of the Steve Baker, Mark Francois, Diana Ditchers would have voted against it. That is true. Jacob Rees-Mogg actually has already voted for May's deal, could well vote for this deal again, especially to keep his cabinet post. He needs somewhere to lay his head, I mean, let's be honest. And we haven't even talked about that. No, it's fine, we'll save that. The cabinet ministers who Johnson purged would all have voted for a deal. Theresa May would vote for a deal. And actually, at this point, you would have got those 20 or 30 Labour MPs would have voted for a deal.
Absolutely. Effectively, you can just look at the list of like the people that supported this, that kind of like were co-signees or whatever of the Stephen Kinnock amendment. I think there's Labour for a deal or something.
I think it's called the "We're really bad at politics" amendment.
Those people would have absolutely backed it at this point, and that's before you even get into Kate Hoey and that sort. Who would prefer no deal?
Well, and people like John Speller weren't on that list, who probably would vote for a deal. In fact, the name of it should be. There was a documentary on Stephen Kinnock around the where they were filming in the 2017 election, and his wife.
Are you doing this now?
Yeah, it's terrible. I've forgotten her name, and she was the Prime Minister of Denmark, because I had more power and influence than Stephen Kinnock ever will. And yeah, and so she says to him, why are you doing this now? And that should be the name of the amendment. Instead, what Cummings is trying to do, and what Johnson's trying to do, is go full no deal, essentially to purge the Conservative Party of its moderate Conservative
fringe faction. Yeah.
Yeah, which... it's just not great long-term for the Conservative Party.
No, absolutely not.
Whereas actually what Jeremy Corbyn, I think, has been about is that the reason why Labour's Brexit position has been incoherent and difficult to understand is because we're trying to have a Brexit policy that everyone can sign up to, that Caroline Flint and Melanie Onn and Jenny Chapman can sign up to, as well as David Lammy, Jess Phillips, everyone else. And the problem is, there really isn't one at the moment. But I think actually it's the kind of leader that Jeremy Corbyn is. He's more interested in party unity. A different kind of leader would have said, look, Caroline Flint, Stephen Kinnock, whoever, this is our bloody policy. Sign up for the bloody policy. And he hasn't quite done that, which in a way is admirable. And it's certainly a lot more admirable than just purging people. The thing that strikes me actually, Steve, is we build this as crunch week. And yet it doesn't really feel like crunch week.
I think, and this is kind of the issue that we've got in British politics at the moment, is that every week is crunch week. Every day is crunch day or deadline day, because we don't have a workable solution to the issue that is Brexit. Until we have a majority in Parliament that it will agree to an actual end in some form of Brexit. Whether that be a deal of some kind which takes us out of the European Union, but it's not no deal, or revocation or a referendum or whatever, we're going to continue with this. Because ultimately, until we get that resolution, this continues day in, day out.
And interesting, seeing polling this week, it was a big poll, 10,000 people, that show the Tories on, I think, 311 seats, losing 6, Labour losing 20, so on about 232 or 40, I want to
something
say.
Something like that.
And what I've said, and I was saying this on the podcast when Labour were calling for an election, is I don't see how an election leads to a Parliament with a majority to pass a Brexit deal. No. I can see possibly an election that leads to a majority to pass, say, a referendum on Brexit.
Because that will be the cost of any kind of Labour-led coalition.
Labour's policy is already a referendum. The cost of, I assume, the Lib Dems entering a Labour coalition will be it's not led by Jeremy Corbyn. Now, that leads us on to a whole realm of beans. I can see a Labour, Lib, SNP alliance forming, essentially to get a referendum through. Then the question is, what do you have on the ballot paper? Presumably then Labour try and renegotiate something, presumably.
At this point, let's be honest, Labour has actually gotten to the point where I think we've kind of almost wanted them to be for quite a while, which is they're pro-referendum, they're largely speaking anti-Brexit. If they were to go and, oh, we're going to try and attempt to if they were to go form a government and then try and negotiate, that would then potentially cost them an awful lot of support. So I'm not necessarily sure that would be the case. But at this point in time, to be honest, it's all fishes would be knee deep in cod territory. Like, it doesn't matter because we don't know where we're going to be tomorrow, let alone by the end of whenever the next election is.
I imagine almost certainly we'll try and find a time to meet up on Monday or Tuesday to try and talk about what's happening. I might just come to your work at lunchtime. In the meantime, we have a website, notenoughchampagne.com. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. Our Twitter handle is @nochampagnepod. James Cram designed our logo. You can follow him on Twitter @JamesCram. And Dave Depp is responsible for our theme tune, Plucky Good Times. I'm @PaperbackRioter.
I'm @AcousticRadical.
Happy plotting.